Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Well, it's Friday.
What are we doing here?
What are we doing here? It's Friday. It's not Wednesday, and people are wondering, what the heck are we doing on the air?
We're doing a pop-up show. We're doing a flash. What do they call them when you suddenly need a flash mob or something?
We're doing a flash mob show?
Yeah.
No, well, here's the funny thing, right? Just when you think you got us figured out.
Well, this is sort of the veterans angle, but a very, very, very special angle.
Yeah, we actually, I told people that we weren't on the air today, this week on Wednesdays. We usually are on the air Wednesdays 12 to 1, and we weren't on the air this Wednesday because I put it on you, by the way, and I said we were having technical upgrading in the studio, right?
Sort of, yeah.
It wasn't really that. Paul was off doing something. What were you doing Wednesday, Paul? Why weren't we on the air?
I went to the Cove. UCI has a thing called the Applied Innovation Center. And they were doing a very interesting presentation for the upcoming Cox Fast Pitch competition, where Cox Cable is going to give away $10,000 to some startup here. So we were over covering that event.
So we're all
Michael Sawitz was speaking from Fast Start Studio, and he's done a show here before.
So we're all flush, and we got the $10,000, right?
I'm hopeful. Maybe I'll pitch. I don't know.
Did you pitch or no?
No. This is just this was a sort of a pre-kickoff event. It comes up in April. You can go to Cox.net. We'll probably have something on our website about it. It's a big competition where they give away $10,000, and they get like 300 people submitting pitches to this thing.
Very cool. So that's why we weren't on there on Wednesday.
Yes.
So we figured the only fair thing to do is that we pay for, you know, that just lapse in judgment of not being on there on Wednesday with a really special Friday show.
Really special show.
Right? And I want to give a shout out to my friend Manny, who was bugging me yesterday afternoon. He was trying to get hold of me, and I was busy, and I couldn't really talk to him, and he was texting me, and then he finally said, you know, I got somebody you need to meet, and they're only in town for a couple of days, and you need to meet them, and I said, okay.
Because he had heard, for example, that you do veterans shows.
Right, exactly.
And he'd also heard the interview where you had Paul Tibbetts' son, Paul Tibbetts being the colonel that was in command of the atomic bomb mission.
Yeah, we had the gentleman who's the grandson.
It wasn't Paul Tibbetts' son. It was the other pilot. His son.
Yeah, the son of the guy who actually flew the mission over Hiroshima,
Nagasaki,
and dropped the bomb. So anyway, people who have been listening to the show, they know that we do have a special soft spot in our hearts for veterans, and we also like to get stories that told that don't really get told,
yes,
and talk about things in ways that maybe we don't normally talk about them. And so when Manny introduced this gentleman, the possibility of this gentleman being on the air, I told Paul, we got to do this. Let's do a live show. And you can be listening to us on octalkradio.net.
Mm-hmm.
Click the listen live button, or you can go to OC Talk Radio
Facebook page.
Or the YouTube.
The Rad Life. The Rad Life. We're on the Rad Life.
On the Rad Life too? Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So, and if you missed this, we'll be posting a link to watch it later.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's being recorded on YouTube.
That being said, I would like to introduce our guest for the next hour, Mr. Harlan Geronimo, author, historian, medicine man, shaman?
Correct.
Shaman.
Councilman,
tribal leader, and great-grandson.
Correct.
Of Geronimo.
The real live Geronimo.
And it's really a pleasure to have you here. I'm glad we could make this happen.
I say more than that. I say it's an honor to have you here.
And it's an honor, yeah.
It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I know Rod's going to ask most of the questions, but I just have to start by saying I am a history buff. I was a history major, American history major in college, and always had a soft spot, as did my father, for stories of the American West. And at first I thought it was all John Wayne, you know, the Indians are the bad guys and we're the good guys. And much later did I hear the stories of Chief Joseph of Nez Perce, or however they say the Indians.
Nez Perce.
And the story of, you know, all the great chiefs that we can rattle off here, Sitting Bull, Geronimo, and all those, and who just, we broke, I think, every agreement we ever made with the Indians, and the Indians suffered terribly from it. But out of that, there were tales of heroism that even inspired their enemies here, and your great-grandfather was certainly the epitome of that, Geronimo.
So,
what was Geronimo? Now, Geronimo is just Jerome in Spanish, right?
No, well...
how did he get the name? That's why I've always been unclear, because what was his real tribal name, and how did he come up with the Spanish name? Because he spoke Spanish, I think, too, didn't he?
Correct. He was fluent in the Spanish language. Also, you know, the Apache, you know, there's several dialects, but he was very fluent in these areas also.
Right.
And he understood the Navajo.
So why did he take, what was his tribal name?
Let's give people a geographical reference, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people think that Apache is just one entity, right? But in fact, there are tribes within that, right?
Correct.
Do you have a little background on that, and maybe what part of the country are we talking about?
We're talking about the Southwest, like New Mexico, Arizona, Southern Arizona, Northern Mexico. Presently, we have the White Mountain Apache tribe and also the San Carlos over in the central part of Arizona. And then in the central part of New Mexico, we have the Mescalero Apache tribe. And then you go north, northern New Mexico, you know, that's the Hickory Apache tribe. And then you go on across to Oklahoma, they have the Fort Sill Apache tribe.
Right.
And then...
No, but there wasn't originally a tribe in Oklahoma. That was because of the incarceration?
Yes, that's because of the incarceration back in 18...
The Trail of Tears, where they literally brought, starting with the Cherokees out from Georgia under Jackson's administration, they drove them across the country and started herding them into this strange place called Oklahoma, which was the only part of the country nobody wanted. They didn't think there was anything there. And so they started bringing all the tribes in, and that became Indian territory for a long time. And then, I guess in some cruel irony, they discovered oil there, and many of the tribes benefited from that. But for a long time, that was the only place to put tribes because it was the only place Americans didn't want to go.
So how many tribes currently?
Do you call it the Apache Nation? Is it
Yes, we call it Apache Nation.
Right.
You know, just like I said, there's two in Arizona, two in New Mexico, one in Oklahoma.
Okay.
But there's other smaller tribes.
Other small
tribes. That's branched off from these tribes.
Okay. Uh-huh. And did they originally call them bands, or is that just how we referred to them? They'd say the band of this band of Indian or that band of Indians? Or?
Well, at that time, that's how they distinguished, you know, these Apache tribes at that time. But now, you know, these tribes are bigger tribes, you know. They got maybe half a million acres, maybe more, you know, homelands. And the population had really exploded also on these reservations. You know, back, I'll say the turn of the century, our tribe, you know, probably was maybe 300. But now, you know, the same tribe is about 5,000.
Because all the tribes are pretty decimated by the start of the 1900s
here.
Yes,
they did.
Through disease and through forcing them to leave the land and their way of life and turn into, because they weren't farmers by nature. Anything.
Well, you have to understand, you know, at that time, just like the Apache Nation, you know, we had all the southern New Mexico, you know, that was our homelands, and southern Arizona, the northern Mexico, the, you know, for my, you know, heritage, you know, the Chiricahuas, that's what Geronimo's from, the tribe, they had all the Sierra Madre area, you know, it's about 100 miles from Mexico City.
Right.
Back then, that's their summer range. You know, they used to migrate from the Gila Wilderness down into northern Mexico, you know, also down in the Baja area. You know, that was their winter range.
For those who are watching us on YouTube and Facebook on camera, who's with you today? that's trying to work his way around the mic, trying to get into some candy. Why don't you introduce who you brought with you today?
Oh, I brought my great-grandson. His name is Xavier Antone. I mean, he's only 3 and 7 months, and I take him all over with me.
That's awesome.
Almost the same age as my grandson. That's
yes.
why I brought all these toys for him to play with here.
And, yeah. and I don't know that people can see, but why don't you lean in here? Who's the lovely lady that's
also,
sitting next to
my wife's with me here, Karen.
Actually, yeah, we can. We can see her.
Oh, Karen Geronimo. She's a historian also, Apache historian, a school teacher, a linguist for the tribe also, a medicine woman, Apache medicine woman. What else? Let's see. She travels with me all over Europe.
Now,
also.
I saw where you were, like, about a year maybe or so ago, where you were actually in D.C.
Correct. I was in D.C. at the Library of Congress book festival.
It was a book festival, right?
Correct.
Because you co-authored, I think, a book?
Yeah, that's right. I co-authored a book.
What was the title of the book?
The name of the book is In the Footsteps of Geronimo.
Okay. So we've given people a sense of where, you know, a setting, a time setting of, you know, we're talking about the Southwest, we're talking sort of border with Mexico, that it sort of is why it's sort of the language in the Spanish, right?
That's correct.
And I know that a big part of what I want to talk about today is, like, you know, sometimes the story isn't told, the real story isn't told, and I think that's part of why you did the book.
Correct.
To share some of the things that doesn't come out, or some of the stuff about the culture,
the struggle,
sort of the daily life, but not necessarily just the struggle, but also the normalcy. And, you know, okay, so Harlan, would you share with us a little bit of what it was like? What was that culture back in the day before the Trail of Tears and before people were moved to Oklahoma? What was life like for an Apache in the
early
1800s? Yeah,
1800s. Yeah.
Well, you have to understand, you know, like my great-grandfather, you know, grew up in the Gila wilderness. That was an area where they had plenty of wildlife, you know, deer, turkey, bear, you know. At the time, they also had the Merian elk, mm-hmm. which is extinct now, extinct during the turn of the century. But they had all the food they need. They even had their own gardens at that time, corn, squash, you name it. However, you know, later on, you know, the Eastern migration had begun slowly.
White settlers coming across the plains, right?
Coming over, you know, intruding on their homelands.
California gold.
California gold, you name it, you
uh-huh.
know. And then from the south, we had the Spaniards, you know, pushing north,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Apaches from that area. And,
And the one thing I always heard when I studied this was that, talk about clash of cultures. When the first white settlers came into the areas, like Lewis and Clark, they were generally welcomed. Okay, who are you? You don't look like us. Okay, fine, share this, share that, because they lived in communal societies. And when they started signing treaties away saying, well, you can live here, they didn't understand the idea, at least I don't know about the Apache, but most of the Indian tribes did not understand the idea, really understand it, of private ownership, that when you sign this over, it belongs to them, and you can't go there and hunt and fish and do anything else anymore. So there was a complete misunderstanding of what was taking place. So it was too late.
So with the Eastern migration, with the settlers moving west, and then you were saying that you had the Spaniards from below.
Correct.
So what did that do to the...
Well, you know, at first, just like he said, you know, they were friendly.
Yeah, adapted to each
yeah.
other. Yeah.
Then later on, it became violent because they were pushing, you know, the Apaches out of their homelands. You know, they were claiming the land, you know, that wasn't theirs at mm-hmm. the time. And then pretty soon it turned to killing, you know. But at the same time, the Apaches were always militant-like, you know, they were warriors, you know, this is one of their livelihood, you know, they were, when they were growing up, they had to learn to ride a horse when they were about 3 years old, and learn to shoot a bow and arrow, also, you know, the rifles that were introduced at that time, and the pistols, which they came very
Very adept at doing,
right? Adapted and excellent.
Who were their enemies? Who were their tribal enemies? Because a lot of the tribes obviously fought with each other throughout the period. They couldn't unite under one common leader.
You know, the Apache nation itself, you know, they bow to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're...
But what other Indian tribes, for example, are in the Southwest? I don't know what
other native. Was there any rivalry between tribes that was...
That's right. You know, they didn't get along with the Pueblos, the Navajos, even my grandfather's tribe. They didn't get along with San Carlos or... Mm.
So even
Korea.
Internally,
yeah, internally
within the same nation. Okay. And was it... I read something, and maybe this was wrong, but I read something that part of that culture, that sort of skill set to develop that early on, mm-hmm. was really driven by survival.
That's right.
That it was sort of survival skills, right? Plus, what you're explaining is that there was this pressure from the mm-hmm. south as well as the
they were
migration.
Squeezed,
right?
And the Apache lasted longer than most tribes because it lived in the mountains, right? And I mean, these weren't Plains Indians. The Plains Indians were driven away first.
That's right. You have to understand. You know, that's my grandson. He wants to
look over here. See, you're on camera.
Yeah, he's on camera.
Wave.
Look. Wave.
Wave everybody.
Up there.
Say hi.
He wants to tell a little story about, you know, he's barely 3 1/2.
That's cute.
7.
He wants to tell his story.
Yeah. We'll have to have him back.
Yeah.
That's right. You have to understand, you know, that these warriors were taught, you know, also, just like you mentioned, the survival skills very early in life, you know. They'll observe a deer out, you know, in the meadows, just walking, just, you know, looking all day, just, you know, see their
habits.
Their habits, right. The instincts, you know, and they just...
Patiently
there
wait,
all
right.
day, you know, so, just looking at it, you know, and...
So what happened to take that... Because I know that your great-grandfather, there was a genuine, supposedly... dislike, distrust, almost hatred of the Spaniards, of the Mexicans, right?
Yes. Correct.
What happened?
And why did he end, that's why I was first asked, well, how did he end up with the Spanish name and speaking Spanish?
Well, but hold on a second. What happened?
Part of that.
Yeah, what happened? What caused that to happen?
Well,
I mean, obviously there was a lot of tension to begin with, but did something specifically happen?
There was a major battle, you know, right now my mind is
sure,
kind of blank.
That's okay.
You know,
it's okay.
Up around northern Mexico, when he was about at least 28 years old.
Okay.
And he was married to a young woman at that time, just recently, you know, married. And in Apache way, you know, they were married, and they had the grandmother and part of the tribe traveling close to one of these little cities, towns at that time.
Yeah.
However, when they went in to, you know, get supplies...
That's your grandfather.
That's
great-grandfather.
My great-grandfather.
Yeah.
The Mexican militant, you know, attacked the settlement that was maybe about 3-4 miles north of that little city.
Where the wife and
and they wiped out the majority of the tribes that were there at that time, and they killed the mother and the kids that were there that were stayed in the camp. Remember, they took all the warriors down into the little town there.
So the warriors weren't there, women and children were killed.
Maybe there were 2 or 3, you know, lookout posts, but, you know, what can you do?
This is the Mexican government.
Yeah, that was the Mexican government. You got, you know, maybe 300-400 militia men, you know.
Right.
Lancers, or at least a lot of Lancers.
Lancers, and
right.
What do you call that? Flint and...
Flint.
Muskets? Muskets, yeah.
You know, wiped out the majority of the... tribesmen that
so
were
that
there.
That I mean that's a big loss. I think I read somewhere like it was 3 kids and his wife.
Yes,
So just to address Paul's point, what is the origin of the name Geronimo?
Oh, well, there's 2 versions. You know,
we'll take both of them.
One came from Mexican leaders, you know, mentioning that, you know, that were running from a band of Apaches, and they believed Geronimo was leading that band down into Mexico. And they had a big major fight, you know, close to one of these cities. And the majority of the soldiers were wiped out, killed.
The Mexican soldiers.
The Mexican soldiers. And they start calling Saint Jerome, you know, and at that time, you know, they...
calling for, trying to have the saints intercede and help them here.
Help them there, but apparently it didn't work. But that name stuck at that time. And then there's another one where this American military officer, you know, was referring to one of the medieval... what you say, knights at that time. So there's, you know, that's another one, you know.
Like the Knights of the Round Table or something. I don't think there was a Jerome in the Round Table. But
it's called...
Chivalry Jousting?
No, I couldn't think of it now. You know,
like the Knights of Columbus, there was a Catholic organization.
Yes,
and stuff.
So it sounds
somehow
like,
you got to.
But it sounds like a name or a title that was given as a result of the interaction with the Mexicans or with the Spanish, right?
Yes, and also from the military officers.
So what is the actual name?
The Apache name.
Well, his Apache name is Guyan, the wise leader.
Yeah, but see, I'm getting
little handouts
from Karen here. So you know, I'm testing you with stuff that she's asking. She's telling
me. She's a historian here.
Yeah, I got the historian.
Maybe
on
we
my
should
side.
Ask her. You should ask her. Right. So he had that was his Apache name. The white settlers, the Mexicans, and the Americans started calling him Jerome for some unknown reason, and that's where this got born.
What was Geronimo's real name?
In Apache, it's called Guyan.
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 Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. So not to have the ladies not be mentioned. Okay. I'm going to have Karen. So Karen, you gave me a note also about somebody else who we didn't mention the name. Who's that?
Got to get really close to the mic there.
Harlan. Did mention Geronimo's first wife's name was Alope.
That's the one that was killed by the Mexicans.
Yes. One child, that was his first child. And military, I guess, had attacked the camp where they were located at and killed his mother, his sister, the only sister he had, and his wife Alope and his first child.
So that's pretty. I mean, that's pretty horrific. I mean, you go off
a lifelong hatred of
That would explain that. So, and the reason I mentioned that is because I wanted to show a little context prior to like maybe what we hear, which is you know the engagement with the U.S. military and all that. There was stuff going on with the Spaniards, and based on a devastating catastrophe,
let me see if
of losing
jump
pretty much everybody in your family.
A little bit here. So, obviously, they had a lifelong battles and running battles with Mexicans, and the white settlers come across, and the band kept getting squeezed and squeezed into tighter and tighter space. At some point, didn't they go on? They were taken, forced on a reservation, and isn't that where Geronimo left the reservation and was the last great fight, Indian fight, that we recount here?
That's right. I believe it was General Crook.
Yes, right.
Came in with this.
The name should have given it away.
Yeah. They called him the great Indian fighter. Yeah. Right.
He's the one.
General Crook. I wonder if I'm going to get an honest deal out of this guy, right?
He's the one that.
This is after the Civil War, like the 1870s or something here, yeah.
So, he, you know, once they incarcerated Geronimo and the majority of his warriors, band, they put him under military guard and transferred him over to the San Carlos Apache Reservation in southern, central Arizona at that time. But the military didn't understand that. At that time, they didn't get along with the tribe itself, San Carlos Apache tribe.
Right, you mentioned. Yes. So they put them in with some people that they didn't get along with.
Yeah, there was hostility there, resentment.
Because they just saw them all as Indians, put them all together, right?
Uh-huh. And that's one of the reasons, you know, why he had escaped from there with his warriors.
Right, because he actually escaped a number of times. Or just took off and left a number of times.
Left the reservation, as they say.
Which was kind of part of what drove the U.S. government kind of military crazy, because he just would take off, or they would escape, and there were people that would go with him, right?
Correct.
So what happened after that he left the San Carlos Reservation?
After that, you know, I guess they were studying, you know, the whole situation from Washington at that time, and they decide to replace Crook with General Miles.
Mm-hmm. And Nelson Miles, right?
Yeah, General Miles, and at that time, they had gone into their summer range down into northern Mexico, into the Sierra Mountain. Mm-hmm. The mountain is so big and rugged that, you know, it's not easy. It was impossible, right, you know, for the military to get in there.
And the U.S. military couldn't cross the border.
They couldn't cross the border at the same time.
Right. Yeah, but weren't they using, were they at that point, even as early as that, using the San Carlos Indians as scouts?
Yes, correct.
I have Karen's notes here, so, you know, I'm getting all kinds of good stuff.
One band is helping find the Geronimo's band here. Right?
That's right. You see, Crook understood, you know, that it was very impossible for Mexican Army military officer or American officer to catch Geronimo and his band at that time. So he figured,
they're in the mountains,
you know,
they knew the territory well. And
So he kept studying them. Pretty soon, you know, he figured, you know, that it was impossible. We can't conquer him. We can't catch him. So
we can't go in to get him.
Yes.
So what did he do?
So he recruited, you know, Apaches from San Carlos and White River Reservation at that time. And there were Apaches. You know, they grew up in the mountains, you know, hunting
Apaches to catch Apaches.
Yeah, so it took an Apache to catch an Apache.
Mm-hmm. And so they went into the Sierra Madres.
So they tracked them down into Sierra Mountains. Okay. You know, they're very excellent trackers of these Apaches. Yeah. You know, they can tell you the date, the time, even I heard the minute when they went through the Sierra.
But I want to give people a little bit of context too. There was something I had read about the fact that also it was known that, because somebody would say, like, you know, Geronimo is in this area, and they figured, okay, by the time we got the news,
yeah,
there's no way of tracking, because unless, like, it is like an Apache tracking an Apache, a one-day-old trail is pretty much useless.
That's correct.
Like, it's not, you cannot do that. So, you know, think about that. It wasn't like an email. I didn't send a text message saying, hey, Geronimo was seen over here, right? By the time that news got to somebody, and they acted on it, unless you had, like, Apaches tracking Apaches or scouting Apaches, you couldn't, it was difficult to find him.
Right.
Especially in the terrain that you were not familiar with.
Let's set the context up, because I don't remember the exact story, but he left with the final time he left, the one that Geronimo became famous for, where General Miles finally went in and they said, this is the last great chief. Was he a chief or a medicine?
He was at both.
Okay. Last one that we haven't corralled and kept on the thing. All the rest are dead or subdued or on the reservations. Geronimo's defying us the last time. It's a rugged territory. He goes back and crosses the Mexican border. All these reasons we can't catch him. How many people were in the tribe at the time on the run, living in the mountains, and how many American troops, how many troops were trying to kill?
Well, there, I
just set up
approximately,
roughly,
you know, about 29, and there were, I'll say maybe at that time they had about 200 Apache scouts tracking him also.
And how many?
So
and
a band of 29 with Geronimo.
And whole armies trying to catch him.
Yeah. Yes.
So there's maybe 1,000 people trying to catch 29 people.
So in the end, though, was he captured or did he surrender?
Well, because he promised.
Right.
You know,
okay.
General Miles promised Geronimo that he'll stay in Florida for 2 years, and then he'll give the Gila, you know, wilderness back to him.
Right.
You know,
so he'd be incarcerated for 2 years, yes. And then he could go back home.
Back home. You know, right. That's where he was born.
Right.
And the crime he committed was what? Leaving the reservation or things he did along the way?
He did things he did along the way. However, he didn't keep the promise.
So it was a trick, right?
Yeah,
he tricked him in saying, oh, you know, you'll spend a couple of years, mm-hmm. and then you can come back home.
Yes,
right.
Correct.
And that never happened.
It never happened.
Right.
I mean, you know, presently, you know, just like back in 2009, I was trying to repatriate, you know, the remains of my great-grandfather.
Right.
But apparently...
From who?
Well, from the government and also the state of Oklahoma.
And where does his body remain?
He's buried at... On the Fort Sill Military
Reservation, right? Uh-huh. And the thing about that is he actually asked, right?
Correct.
And he asked from somebody in particular, I think, a president of the United States at that time,
correct.
Right?
That's correct.
To be allowed to go back and die at home.
Home.
Uh-huh. And he was denied.
He was denied.
Right.
But remember,
just I think was it Teddy Roosevelt?
Yes, Teddy Roosevelt. But yeah. Remember, you know, General Miles promised him.
Right, I know. And that was how many years prior? I mean, it's, how old was he when he...
He was, according to Wikipedia, born in 1829 uh-huh. And died at Fort Sill in 1909.
1909, correct.
Uh-huh. So how old was he when he passed?
That would be 80, 80 years old.
I think it was 80.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. And he pretty much asked to go back home, and he was denied the right
correct.
To go back home and die.
Correct.
It, you know,
he was denied.
Denied that. And he ended up dying at Fort Sill.
Fort Sill.
And he's buried in Fort Sill. And there's a controversy about his remains, right?
Correct.
So what's the controversy about your great-grandfather's remains?
Well, you know, just like the ordinary citizen, you know, you could... repatriate, you know, the remains of, you know, your cousin relatives, you
right.
know, with no problem, you know, just, you know, maybe legal documents from, you know, the county or a government, that's it. But here, you know, we petitioned the federal government and we haven't, you know, gotten any approval.
And what's the why the denial or why the
well,
did they deny it or did
well
they?
The situation here is we filed in Washington D.C.
right,
you know, in the federal courts, and they told us that, you know,
you can't file
you
against
you can't file in Washington, you have to file in the state of Oklahoma.
Uh-huh. Right.
But I don't see, you know, why they're referring us to Oklahoma.
Yeah, but
now.
isn't it a military base and therefore under the jurisdiction of the U.S. government versus the state government?
That's right. That's right. Right. Also, you know, the military in Fort Sill is against, you know, the removal also. But, you know, I heard, you know, that they're making about maybe $2 million, something around that much.
From tourism?
From tourism.
Interesting. Uh-huh. So that's got to be hard. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, you're being denied the return of remains of a family member.
Correct.
And there's somebody that's actually making money. Uh-huh. Off that.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know how that's rough. That's pretty tough, and that's pretty much a reality that you've lived all your life, right? I mean,
that's right.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, the federal government, you know, the military, the state of Oklahoma, but also the Fort Sill Apache Nation there is opposed to that.
Opposed to the removal?
The removal.
Well, because it's also additionally a benefit, right?
Uh-huh, that's right.
To them. Uh-huh. Interesting. And so
can I just read just in summary here? Yeah. This is from Wikipedia here. It said that during Geronimo's final period of conflict from 1876 to 1886, he surrendered, and they put that in quotes, three times, and accepted life on the reservation. After an intense pursuit in 1886, in northern Mexico by U.S. forces that followed Geronimo's third and final breakout, as they call it, from the reservation. Mm-hmm. He finally surrendered the last time and, as he said, was treated as a prisoner of war and promptly removed first to Fort Bowie and then by railroad to Florida, where all the Apaches were sent to join the rest of the Chiricahua tribe. Why Florida? Why did they move them that far? Florida can't be more different from where they were. That must have been a very hardship to take the tribe and move it en masse, this band of Indians.
So let me just point out something that I find kind of a little bit funny, though.
Yeah.
And it's a reflection on where we are as a nation. Okay? We're sitting here with the great-grandson of Geronimo, and we're checking out Wikipedia.
Well, just
for information.
I know. I'm just trying to.
I know. I'm not picking on you. I'm just thinking. I find it.
Because we go to the
humorous
internet for everything
that we would basically, you know, do that. Now, one thing I was fascinated by one thing that I read with your grandfather or your great grandfather. But before I get to that, I'm going to say this. You're a veteran.
Correct.
Right? You did how many tours in Vietnam?
I made two tours.
Two tours in Vietnam. Uh-huh. And then your dad served.
Correct.
Right? And your dad served D-Day Normandy?
D-Day Normandy.
Right.
By the time, they got to Belgium, he was in eight major battles. Just imagine, eight major battles.
So you two actually have something in common, Paul and
we always
Harlan.
Talk about veterans. We're about the same age. You might have a year or two on me here, but we're all in our 60s here. And my dad was a World War II veteran who was a bomber pilot, flew B-17s, and always talked about on D-Day having to go out. Normally they flew one mission, and if they made it home, phew, they didn't have to fly for a couple of days. But on D-Day he had to fly three missions. He had to go out from England, bomb, come back, load up, and do it again in support of the troops.
So your dad was flying
overhead, and his dad
overhead,
was on the beach.
Your dad was on the beach in Normandy.
The beach. Uh-huh.
Okay, I just wanted to bring. I wanted to point that out because we're talking about your great grandfather, but you guys are a family that have been of service to this country in military service.
And I guess I don't want to be rude, but I have to ask the question, which I'm sure our listeners are thinking: after the treatment of your grandfather,
great grandfather,
all these years, leading to this horrible end, prisoner of war, trucked off to a strange place called Florida, doesn't look anything like the mountains of Arizona, where he grew up and lived, promised to come back, never does, dies in exile. Why, then, would his descendants not still be angry and instead fight and die for this country?
Well, and that's my point, is even with all of that, there's still a heart of service,
right,
and have served in the military, and two tours in Vietnam, and D-Day Normandy, and eight battles, did you say?
Yeah,
eight major battles. I mean, that is not a joke.
And because Indians by nature are still treated in this country, aren't they, as a separate nation within a nation, so you have sovereignty, you don't have to get drafted, you don't have to go.
Well, and it comes to situations like where, you know, trying to request remains to be returned, for example, right? It's not that I'm just somebody who's been around. You know, I've served. I've been of service. My family's been of service. We're asking for something. And then there's sort of this denial, this sort of almost like second-class approach to dealing with things. And I'm not sure how much truth there is to this, but there's also the shadow of the fact that some of those remains that are Fort Sill some of them are not there, but in fact reside somewhere else with a secret society.
That's what you're talking about, the Skull and Bones.
The Skull and Bones, right?
Which is, Skull and Bones, for those of you who don't, isn't that at Yale?
That's Yale, yeah.
And it's a secret society that you get, and people like George Bush were in Skull and Bones. It's the elite of the elite, and they have these secret, you know, ceremonies.
So what do you think about that? Is there truth to that?
Right after we filed the lawsuit, you know, at that time, you know, President Bush just got in office. I mean, we had to file this,
senior
this lawsuit.
Senior or junior? Senior or junior?
They were both members.
Excuse me. He was just getting out of office. Remember, that was his last term. And then in January, Obama.
Oh, so it was
you know,
W.
Took office.
George W.
And what's the rumor, that they actually have his skull there or some part of his skeleton there?
Oh, well.
Because it's secret.
What I'm trying to explain is, you know, I hate to do this back then, you know, to file against President Obama, but I had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a great president. You know, I like the president. I like Obama.
I voted for him, too.
And, you know, but I had to, you know, file a lawsuit. At that time, I also filed a lawsuit against Skull and Bones.
But again, you haven't explained. What do they think the secret society has? Some of his skull or bones in this secret society?
Well,
is that true? Because nobody will tell you. This is a secret society.
Nobody will tell me. But around that time, I had a dream. This is true. I mean, this is coming from me. Just like, you know, the book you probably read, you know, about 9/11, mm-hmm. you know, how I, you know, woke up in the morning and about 2 o'clock, the buildings was falling, you know. It's similar to this. I had this dream, you know, right after, you know, I filed the lawsuit. But in my dream, I picked up something like ESP in my dream from my great-grandfather telling me that the skull is not there. Hmm. I mean, this is something wow. that, you know, I don't talk about, but maybe it's about time. You know,
The theory is that somehow his skull was taken from his gravesite in Oklahoma and resides now at Yale University in the hands of the secret society that's passed down from one group to the next.
And I think the reason why that rumor is because somebody mm-hmm. from the Bush family had actually mm-hmm. served uh-huh. at Fort Sill. And so and so that's sort of the
connection.
And there are some, you know, like notes written and da da da. But you know, they claim that it was fake. So, but you know what? If your great grandfather basically sent you an ESP message in a dream, mm-hmm. that's good enough for me that it's not there. But I just thought I'd bring it up because it just shows again that there's no closure. For
no,
you guys, as a family, uh-huh. I mean, there's no closure.
And why then the connection to this country? I mean, why the feeling of serving in Vietnam or World War II after the treatment of the Indians nation and your great-grandfather in particular? That's what I'm struggling to understand here. All right, you want to answer that?
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Because I would think there might be a resentment. Say, the heck with it. We're not part of this country and never will be. Yeah.
Okay. The reason why you're probably wondering, asking, is because it's in the blood. An Apache will fight for their freedom. Hmm. You know, it's going to be there. It's going to be there no matter what you say, what you think, and what anybody can do about it. An Apache is known to be a fighter.
Because I forgot at what point American Indians were granted U.S. citizenship, but it was very late. It wasn't that long ago that they were actually, for a long time, they were treated as like apartheid. They were a tribe. Had their own. They still have their own sovereignty, but they have co. I don't remember exactly, but you have Indians still have U.S. citizenship. You can vote and you can serve in the military and all these other things, right?
Yes, we have the privilege to vote. We have the privilege to get a driver's license. We have the privilege, just like anybody else.
I'd have to look that up, though. But that wasn't always there. That was
before then. We didn't around the 40s, 1940s, 1930s.
Yeah, right.
But I believe probably after about the 1950s, things have changed. And I wasn't even alive then. I was not even known. But you know, if you read about history, if you know about your people yourself, you're basically a more understanding person, because within this reason why we serve our country is we're known to be warriors.
1924, the Indian Citizenship Act. That's
yes,
what took
that's
place.
Correct.
And you
uh-huh.
you actually have members of your own family that have served, right?
Yes.
So, I'll just read it if you don't mind, Karen. So
easy
it's
there.
Like, so it's your dad,
yes.
Your brother
yes.
served in Vietnam, mm-hmm. plus your nephew served in Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like you say, it's in the blood to fight for freedom mm-hmm. for an Apache. Okay, that's fantastic. So and do you guys feel that that's also part of the legacy that you pass on? I mean. Mm-hmm. The importance of that history, the importance of passing that on to the next generation and the generation after that, that's also part of your life.
That's part of our life, you know, livelihood, because presently, you know, just like my grandson out there, he wants to go into the military, mm-hmm. but I want him to go in, you know, as an officer, you know, probably, hopefully attend West Point or the Naval Academy, you know. I just had another granddaughter that graduated, and I got two friends that are my age that had attended the Naval Academy, and they were going to help her, but she took another career, different, you know, she...
So we only got a few minutes left here. Let me summarize one more thing from Wikipedia, which Rod hates, but it says, in his old age, Geronimo became a celebrity, partly because he was the last of the warrior tribes resisting, and he appeared at fairs, including the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis, where he reportedly rode a Ferris wheel and sold souvenirs and photographs of himself. However, he was never allowed to return to the land of his birth, as you said, and he was considered a prisoner of war until the day he died.
You know what? I like Karen. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking to Harlan here, but, you know, she's like, I'm not getting denied. My family isn't getting denied. My nephew was an instructor at West Point, you know, all this stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's there. There's obviously a lot of pride in being of service, of being a fighter for freedom, a sense of loyalty to country, that in spite of all that stuff, that isn't just this is like a family history of being sort of not fulfilled promises,
right?
And still that sense of loyalty to fight for the
which
good
shows
fight.
That we can heal and come together even after horrible things.
So I do want to talk about one thing that you started talking about, which is about your great grandfather being a celebrity.
Got about
at
five,
some,
10
at,
minutes
at
left,
some
yeah.
point, he basically just said, "Okay, I'm a celebrity, right?
One of the first celebrities."
But hold on, I was watching some stuff where it talked about how he actually learned to write his name.
Correct.
So he could charge people for an autograph, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he wasn't actually doing that.
Right? Uh-huh. And he was like, was it like 25 cents a foot, an autograph or something?
Yes.
And he was like making like $2 a day or something out of this? Or
selling the buttons from his shirt.
And then selling buttons from his shirts. Uh-huh. Now, this is what I found was also fascinating, is that he always had a pocket of buttons.
Correct.
So my thought is, how many buttons do you have on the shirt? So you must have a bucket of buttons somewhere, and you just keep saying, well, here's a button for my shirt, here's a button for my shirt.
They think it's special, yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, Karen's just telling me that Geronimo actually has over a billion hits on the internet.
Wow.
Right?
And I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the one thing that we all know that in popular culture, the paratroopers yelled Geronimo. According to Wikipedia, nobody's sure why this started, but it said that it was in Fort Benning, and that was just in response to they had seen some Indian movies, and or there was a Geronimo song. Although one says, I'll read this one, third explanation, Medicine Bluffs on Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where Geronimo was jailed as a prisoner of war for his whole life, and where his grave is located, there is a steep cliff that's come to be known as Geronimo's Bluff. The tall tales were told about Geronimo, who jumped off that while the Army was in hot pursuit, and nobody knows where that's going.
So, Harlan, I don't care what Wikipedia says. You tell me why.
Why
do they yell Geronimo?
Well, at that time, you know, the invasion was finally starting, you know, and all the equipment were over in England.
Yeah. This is World War II. Yeah.
This is true. You know, a lot of this information was passed down from my great-grandmother, Kate.
Okay.
To my mother, you know, while I was growing up, I was by her side, you know, listening. She mentioned at that time that he was actually there doing the invasion, you know, when the plan was also starting. And he made a suggestion at that time to name the, you know, 501.
It's in here, yeah.
That's a 501.
This is your father?
Yes.
Okay.
Suggest that they name, you know, the...
That particular unit?
Particular unit, you know, Geronimo. And it just took off from there. You know, it was only...
The
like,
501st yes. Parachute Infantry Regiment located at Fort Benning, Georgia.
That's right. They were actually talking about that, you know, in England at that time. And he, you know, made a suggestion at that time. And, you know, his friends were also calling him chief, you know. You know, when I got into the military, everybody was calling me chief.
Everybody's chief.
You know.
Hey, chief. What's up, chief?
So, you know, this guy came up to him and said, hey, chief, what do you suggest? And he just, you know, told them straight, you know. Then they just took off from there.
Well, I think I think the certain part of your great grandfather's mm-hmm. resistance, great grandfather's resilience, mm-hmm. Survivable tactics. Uh-huh. Karen noted earlier that some of these same tactics that Geronimo did, those are tactics that that are in use in the U.S. military today, uh-huh. right?
That's correct.
That there's a lot of stuff there that that
his ability to resist. That's
to be resisting uh-huh. is actually it's like a crisis. It's like what the Marines hoorah.
Hoorah.
It's like mm-hmm. almost has that same kind of thing is to arm yourself with that.
I don't know how long he survived. Maybe you can tell me this last time when he broke away before he was finally rounded up and treated as a prisoner of war and shipped off to Florida and then Fort Sill, Oklahoma. How long was he on the run? How long was he evading capture?
Before he was the last
time. These 29 people evading literally 1,000 or a couple thousand people trying to find him.
Well, I think it was a good 6 months.
Yeah, it was a while, right.
A good 6 months.
Uh-huh. Right, in the mountains. So that's why yes. he became famous, because they couldn't believe with this many people, and as a small little group of people, surely we could find him in a quick period of time. And that didn't happen. It went on for quite a while. And that's, I think, what brought that, and it was the last great Indian group to leave the reservation and fight for their freedom.
Well, that's, I was very fascinated by that last part where he was like, you know what? Okay, fine. I'm here. I'm a celebrity. Right?
I'll put it to my benefit.
He even actually, was part, I think it was Teddy Roosevelt during the campaign for president. And that's why I said, it was kind of interesting that with all of that, when he asked for a simple thing, which is just the right to go back home and die. In the land where he was born,
a prisoner of war till the day he died.
He basically was still denied and still dealt with like as a prisoner, which is that's horrible, honestly. But there was a more recent thing where the use of the name was something that you had an issue with, I think, right? Which was a particularly uh-huh. famous operation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
And then we got it. Then we got to wrap up.
But let's talk about that for a minute, Harlan.
Oh.
What was it?
Well,
where the name Geronimo was used, but it was like almost that wasn't the right thing to do, right?
Well, we were all upset, and also the Indian Nation, in America, were all upset because they used Geronimo when they were looking for Bin Laden,
Osama bin Laden,
uh-huh. yeah. and. They referred to him as Geronimo.
So they referred to Osama bin Laden as Geronimo.
And then when they killed them...
Which is kind of like that's the one we can't find, the one who always gets away. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
There's a certain logic to it.
I understand. But
it might be offensive.
What's your grandfather's name? Let's go as far as your grandfather, not your grandfather.
My grandfather's name was Florenz. Like Florenz?
Florenz?
Florenz Ziegfeld.
You know what? That explains a lot. Okay. All right. But imagine if one day you woke up in the morning and... hated person on the planet that's being hunted down is now being called Florenz.
Right, Florenz.
And nobody else in the planet has a Florenz name other than your grandfather, right?
Right.
I could totally understand that. I think that was a little... I mean, that was a little bit
But in a
nasty.
Way, it was an honor because it was saying...
We can't find him,
guy. Because just like Geronimo, we couldn't find him.
And then I have a...
whole world was searching for him.
You know, I have an attorney friend in New Mexico. He said, Harley, what's the big fuss? I mean, who's going to use a name like that?
Right.
This is something else. You should just be quiet.
Yeah, all I'm saying is, if they're going to do that, uh-huh. then just like with your great-grandfather, with selling the buttons and selling the signatures, mm-hmm. they need to be paying for it.
Yeah. Yes, cash that's in. Right.
Right?
How do they read? You wrote a book in this. How do they get your book?
Let's give the name of the book again, and how can they find it, Harlan?
Okay, it's the name of the book is In the Footsteps of Geronimo. You can find it on Amazon, the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just click in my name, you'll find it.
And give us your name again.
Harlan Geronimo.
Now, explain that to me quickly, because Geronimo really was just not his real name, and it was a nickname given to him by the Mexicans and the army soldiers. Mm-hmm. It's a Spanish word for Jerome. Mm-hmm. How did that become your familiar name? How did that become your family?
Well,
because Indians didn't have family names, I guess.
Well, when he died, he was registered as Geronimo
mm-hmm.
under the federal,
death certificates,
death certificate registration, all that. And
not his Apache name, but this.
No,
not,
yeah, but you guys came over. You guys came over in Ellis Island, and God knows what your names were in Ireland.
Butchered.
And it got changed anyway.
Butchered, yeah,
yeah. Uh-huh. So that's that's common, you know. Right. I think it still happens today with people from different places. Okay, so my name. Okay, I want you guys to tell me. Okay, because I don't know if there is one or not, but my name actually in Arabic means thunder.
Oh, okay, that's neat.
Right, and it's actually a functional word in the Arabic language, and it means thunder. And we have names in Arabic that are, you know, relevant to some sort of, you know, attributable, like to a verb or an adjective or a description or something, right? Uh-huh. So we do that. And also family names that's, you know, like cobbler, for example, in English, right? They're names that are basically based on trades or country. Or
Lynch.
Cities that you came from or whatever, right, areas. So what is the word for thunder in Apache? Is there a word for thunder in Apache?
Yeah,
okay.
Be.
Do I need to go to Karen again?
Yeah, go ahead. I think she needs to get, you know, be pushed out in the
word
limelight.
Thunder is dot din di.
Mm-hmm. Dot din di? Okay, so this is the dot din di life.
That's very nice. Dina.
Okay, I'm gonna find the book.
Okay.
And I'm gonna send it to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get one for Paul, too.
Sure. Okay.
And
do
I want
that.
You to autograph those.
Okay,
oh, please.
I'll do that.
Yeah, I'd love
okay,
to.
You know, I like to mention honest. Another thing.
Please,
you know,
go ahead.
Just like you said, my great-grandfather became a celebrity at the end of years, you know.
A businessman. I was like, what can I learn from this guy? Because he's like charging 25 cents for a signature.
Before there were the Cardassians, there was Geronimo. Uh-huh.
The buttons thing in the pocket was brilliant. I mean, like how many buttons on your shirt? And he said he always had a pocket full of buttons that were from his.
There are families passing this down saying, I have one of the precious buttons from Geronimo shirt. There are like 8 million of them. Yeah.
The sad side of that is that it's sort of continuing,
yes.
But now with his bones.
Well, presently, you know, I just completed my 16th trip to Europe. And all, you know, doing these trips, we do book signing. Also, we've been invited to international fairs.
Yeah.
You know, we did...
you said you've been to Paris like for 8 times?
16 times.
16 times. Wow.
Uh-huh. Paris, and not only Paris, but, you know, other major cities like Switzerland, you know.
Yeah.
Germany, we've been to, you know, Frankfurt. Well, you name it. We've been there. But
so how does it feel to be a part of something that isn't even limited to the United States? How do you feel about having that kind of heritage?
Well, I didn't know the name was this big till I got to Europe. I mean, over there, you know, they just put out the red carpet for us. You know, every time we land, you know, a limousine pick us up, and they take us to one of these big, you know, we even stayed in castles, you know. This is something that people never experience, you know. Just imagine we were born, you know, on the west side of a big mountain on the reservation, way in the corner. And this guy now is flying to Europe every year three times a year.
Well, you know what? I think I'm really thrilled to hear that. Honestly, I think sadly sometimes we don't appreciate what we have closer to home.
Uh huh.
And it takes something like that to show us exactly what value and what we really have, the real worth of what we really have. And not every story is based on beautiful, you know, background and all this stuff, but there's still substance to that. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I think the fact that somebody would scream Geronimo as they jump out or be, you know, as a sign of resistance or, you know, survival, you know, that's a lot of pride probably there.
Yeah,
right?
It is. There's a lot of pride. You know, also, we're invited to Libya. And then another place was
Tanzania.
Tanzania. You know, one of the...
in Africa, right.
The retired prime minister wanted to meet the grandson of Geronimo and also grandson of
that's amazing,
Crazy
right?
Horse.
The legend lives on.
To Paul's point, before the Kardashians,
yes.
There was Geronimo.
That's right.
Let's leave it there. All right, to give us the book one more time, and then Rod, and take us out.
Yeah, go ahead, Harlow. Give us the book again.
In the Footstep of Geronimo.
In the Footstep of Geronimo. And you know what? I'm going to go get that today, and I'm going to send it to you. Well, how long are you going to be around till?
We're going to be leaving in the morning.
In the morning?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, I don't think Amazon will get it to me that fast. Yeah. But I really appreciate you guys being here, and thank you, Karen, for being here. I'm glad that you are here. Thank you for the notes, and you know it's like I had my own research department next to me, right?
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Exactly.
Okay, and I want to thank Manny again for introducing us. Safe journey back. Stay in touch.
Thank you for your service.
I really appreciate
you. Thank you for all your family service to this country.
And thank you for your service.
Sorry, my ancestors or our common ancestor didn't treat these things better here.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate that. God bless you all.
Thank you. God bless you, too. This is Paul Skard, actually. Paul Roberts.
All right.
God knows what his name was when he came.
Take us over here.
Okay.
Out, Ron.
And you guys can reach us normally Wednesdays, 12 to 1, live on the OCTalkRadio.net, The Rad Life. You can look for us on Facebook. You can reach me by email, Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S.
Just type Thunder.
Yeah, I think we should probably grab that. What do you think? Actually, Thunder I won't be able to grab, but maybe I can get the Apache version of it, right, as a domain available.
Oh, that's
but I appreciate you really guys being here. Thank you, listeners, for letting us do this. It's always fun. We just don't know what we're going to do on the show, and you get to find out what we do next week when you join us next week. So
we're going to take us out with a song that I loved, an obscure song from when I was a DJ back in the 70s and 80s, Michael Martin Murphy and his version of Geronimo's Cadillac.
I like
take us out, Paul.
Where he couldn't look the gift horse in the mouth. Sergeant, Sergeant, don't you feel something wrong with your automobile? Governor, Governor, now isn't it strange they didn't have no cars on the Indian range? Warden, Warden, listen to me. Be brave and set Geronimo.